Hi guys, I'm Dan Reed and welcome back to The Career Dad Show. It's been a minute or several months, and to be honest, I needed a bit of a break. If I can't practice what I preach, then what good am I? Can I also say thank you to all the new patrons, Nicole, Dave, Molly, Chloe, Lauren. You guys are awesome. Thanks for sticking with me. Anyway, it's great to be back, and let me introduce you to Amit. Amit realized his career in banking was impacting his mental health and he was becoming someone he didn't like. He decided to jack it all in and start a business during lockdown with a 2- and a 4-year-old at home. Amit believed in Plan B and now helps others to do the same. Hope you enjoy. Welcome back to The Career Dad Show. Amit, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I mean, as good as you can be at the moment. You're in the same boat as me. Now we're all in a national lockdown. So obviously I've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. So my 4-year-old started school in September. So she had she had her first term. We were really grateful for the fact that she had when things kicked off at the beginning of last year, that she wasn't in school, so missing nursery and stuff didn't feel so bad, as it were.
Yeah.
And actually, she started school in that first term, got to do it pretty normally from her perspective. Like, she wouldn't know any better than using hand sanitizer every day and doing this and that. This is like part of a normal routine, right? But such a shame. Like, going back for a second term didn't happen. So
yeah,
it's our first taste of homeschooling, juggling that on top of all the other bits and bobs we're doing. So yeah, I mean, it's a challenge, but I think we're sort of getting by in week 2 of the challenge.
I know. And with a 2-year-old as well, because that's, you know, because my kids are 6 and 18 months. So there's enough of an age gap where their needs are quite different. And I don't think it makes it any less challenging, but you know, I just think 4 and 2, they're still both quite full on demanding.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the youngest is doing a bit of nursery. So we kind of felt that. I think a lot of parents probably have this sort of conundrum at this stage, because obviously part of you is saying why are nurseries open, and you know, should you send them? But the other part of me was like, my daughter Lexi, the 2-year-old, she loves nursery.
Yeah.
And she really strives on it, and she's really sociable.
Mm.
We felt at this sort of time, like, her missing that. So like, at least one person in the family can have a social life. We kind of felt like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's growing and learning and developing so much at this age. It's kind of like, we're really holding her back, and knowing that, you know, we've got stuff that we can work. We need to work on homeschooling Amber, the older one. And then having Lexi there, we just felt like we basically scaled it up and let's let her have some time there. So she's having a bit of normality in her life. And then we're sort of juggling the rest, but back to your point, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, we had that sort of, there's exactly 2-year gap between them. And it has had huge positives and some difficulties. Mm. And I think the positives are only going to get better because they can share interests. Now they're both in that stage where they can sort of play with the same things and sort of have that sort of fun. Mm. It's kind of coming into its own. But obviously that first year where you have got a baby and a 3-year-old, you know, and they're very demanding in different ways of your attention. Yeah. It was quite tricky.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, what my son, he just didn't really sleep for years. And like, he obviously did, but you know, like he just woke up all throughout the night for years and years and years. And I just thought, I don't know if I can do that. Like, there was that point in your head where you're thinking, I know I want another child, but I don't know if I can do that on top of this. But then we got to the point where everything had kind of settled down a little bit and got, you know, we were done with nappies, we were done with, and then it all hit you again. You're like, oh yeah, I remember this now.
But yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? And it's funny because we've kind of had like a 5 or 6 minute conversation off the back of how are you, which the normal British thing to do is go, I'm good, thank you. How are you? Yeah. Good, thank you. How are you? Next. but it feels like a real window to explore. Really, how are you? Which is quite nice in a way.
Yeah.
How have you found homeschooling?
It's tricky. Like I say, we're only in the second week of it. I think we're quite lucky, as in our school has got a fair amount of structure. Obviously, I have no reference point to what other schools do, but you know, we've got 3 Zoom calls a day. Pretty much a timetable telling you, you know, 9 o'clock do this, 10 o'clock do this activity, take a break, you know, kind of following their normal school day kind of thing. And I'm doing most of the homeschooling at the moment because my wife works full time. And because I've been sort of working on my businesses, I've been volunteered to do most of the things because I can make my own hours now, right? Yeah. So I can kind of do it. So for me, and I don't know if it's being a bloke or whether it's just, you know, just me personally, but having that structure, having a timetable is a godsend, to be honest. Yeah. Because I just like, I'm a little bit like, what to do next kind of thing. Because you keep on sort of second guessing yourself. So yes, I mean, so far so good. I mean, she's the main thing I've found is obviously for my daughter to be in school mode when you're at home has been slightly difficult. And I've noticed from the other children in her class, that seems to be the most difficult thing because there's always been this very much, you know, home is fun, relax, you know, blah, blah, blah. And outside is you have friends and school or nursery and blah, blah, blah. And like, it's the first time it's been muddied. And obviously for her being 4.5, she's, you know, she's getting on with it, but there are times where, you know, she's doing her Zoom call or her activity next to the room where the TV is, where she watches movies. Do you know what I mean? And there's that trying to keep them engaged on this section of the day and stuff like that is
But adults struggle with that, you know, like adults working from home for the first time are like, ooh, Xbox is over there or the fridge is there or it's so to expect kids to just, you know, flick a switch and jump into that is incredibly tough. But it sounds like the school are being really supportive, which is cool, because I've heard some kind of, and I'm sure it's not through any fault of a school, but schools that are just trying to put their normal curriculum and timetable onto Zoom. And so kids are just kind of sat like 9 till 3 with an hour for lunch on Zoom calls. And that's like, I'd be done at the end
that's
of that.
That's intense, isn't it?
So and you mentioned so your wife works or she's employed by someone else full time, and you work for you mentioned your businesses. So what are you what do you do?
So basically I spent 15 years out of uni working in the banking industry. Went down a very sort of what I think is the linear path that, you know, society sort of demands of us, you know. I can't say that as a, you know, 17, 18 year old, I was, you know, dreaming of being a banker. Went to uni, did maths at uni, and I kind of just finance numbers. I didn't want to be a doctor or a dentist, which is kind of like the Indian way. And I didn't really sort of, you know, have much of an idea of anything other than, oh, it'd be nice to make a bit of money, really. So I did that, and progressively throughout my career lost more and more interest in it. And to the point, like to the detriment of my mental health, I'd say, and the people around me probably, because it was just, you know, when I felt that unfulfilled and kind of lacking in any kind of passion or, you know, in your work, which is kind of where you spend so much of your day. I kind of found myself in a place like trying to find a way out. And And a couple of years ago, so probably beginning of 2018, I kind of made the sort of hard decision, like, I need to work out of this career. I need to see like what other options there are and stuff. So I sort of made a lot of big changes in my life for that time, and ultimately led me down the road of being quite decided on wanting to start my own business and sort of trying to explore what that could be. And sort of looking around my passions and the things that I enjoy doing. So I actually started off by looking at franchise fairs and things like this to sort of look at, you know, you can sort of, you know, as it says it on the tin, like, you know, you go there and you can be, you could have 30, 40 different types of businesses and, you know, have a chat with people and sort of understand how those businesses work and, you know, what you kind of liked or whatever. And I met a couple of guys.
Like Domino's or a Subway.
Order your next business. It did feel a little bit like that. You know, McDonald's were there, obviously, and Subway. Yeah. But, you know, it's the kind of thing where I felt like, well, look, I've got a lot of translatable skills, being in finance, being, you know, had a bit of accounting background and everything else to go into business. But obviously having a first business, there is options of like doing an online business, maybe doing a online store or doing, you know, other types of marketing income. And then there was sort of like a bricks and mortar business. And I was like, well, really, a franchise could be quite good for a first business to sort of have that, hopefully have that support network and, you know, a group sort of structure or whatever it is. Anyway, I met these guys, and what really interested me was a adventure park for kids.
Okay.
That's what really, really stood out to me. It was something when I was thinking about my passions and things like that, I was looking at, really, I like to have fun and I like to make people happy. I'd like to entertain a little bit. And I kind of like, I was looking at parts of my personality, like, so I was like, why don't I sort of try and do things which help people and make people laugh and make people have fun and whatever else. And like, try and look at things which fall under that category.
Yeah.
So this adventure park thing came up, and my brother-in-law, who we've talked about maybe doing something together in the past, he was quite keen. So we went down this road of sort of looking into that, and I'm still working full time in banking at the time. And we sort of took steps going on to doing that and whatever. And we found a place that we were going to go for. And then at the beginning of this year, when things were getting 2020, sorry, when things were getting quite close, thankfully, in a way, we kind of dodged a bullet that things didn't sort of move quicker because we may have opened before COVID, and that would have been quite tough. What it did end up doing is delaying it massively. What I found was, is that at that time I had made this decision to leave my career, and I'd sort of drawn a couple of red lines of when I was going to finish, which kept getting pushed back. My last role, I was contracting, and I was originally due to finish towards the end of 2019. Extended it for three months, you know, it was like that. When it got to the end of the summer last year, I said to them, look, you know what I'm planning, this is what I'm planning on doing. I don't think I'm gonna renew my contract this time.
Were nuts in the middle of like lockdown and
Say that again. Did they?
Sorry, I said. Did they think you were insane to say you're going to like reject contract work during?
A little bit. But at the same time, the CFO who I spoke to at the time, he said to me that, like, you know, he quite admired it, and he was kind of like, well, you know, a lot of people have the talk, but they don't actually go and do it. Yeah. And he was like, you know what, give me a call if you ever need to, kind of thing. But, you know, good on you, kind of thing. And, you take your little bits of encouragement where they come from, right? Mm. But I think I'd sort of come to terms with the fact at that point that I wanted to start an online business. I wanted to get this going at the earliest possible opportunity, and that I'd kind of mentally drawn a line under that career for now, and I hope it should be forever as long as everything goes well. So So basically, like last summer at the same time before doing this, I think the main thing that sort of drove me was I really wanted to sort of educate myself again. And an obvious place for me to start, which sort of came in very, very much with starting online business, but also for the bricks and mortar businesses, was learning digital marketing and mm-hmm. being very hot on that side of the business, because it was the one area which I felt that I lacked when it came to modern business ownership, right?
Yeah.
So as soon as I finished that job, within a week, I started training in digital marketing. I found an education company which I've really enjoyed, and I kind of started doing their courses, started like building things, and a lot of the course was practical. So I built my first website. I sort of thought about what did I want to do for my online business, and I thought, well, if I'm for the bricks and mortars business, when they happen, if they're going to be kind of creating a fun atmosphere, helping people relax, helping people get away from, you know, the bits of life that they don't like, you know, for the adults and the children, right, and things like that, then and then marry that up with the sort of turmoil I went through a few years ago, the uneasiness I felt and wanting to get out of the sort of rat race kind of thing.
Yeah.
I thought, well, my online business, my real focus should be on helping people do the same.
Right.
And that's kind of where I started Believe in Plan B, which is my online business, which is effectively trying to share my story and my message with people to maybe give them advice or encouragement or hope in some cases,
yeah,
that there is more to life. And, you know, you can maybe do these things in your spare time. You can do it as a hobby. You could do it, you know, you could, there's so many different avenues out there where people are probably, you know, making money or at least finding some fulfillment and creativity and, you know, outlets for some of the things which they're not getting from their jobs.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be a really good idea to sort of have that as the target of that business. So I've been working on that. We're still working through on the other businesses, which we're hoping. There's two. As well as the adventure park, what's come around now is a bar, which is for it's like a competitive gaming bar.
Okay.
So, like, you know, you can go there and, you know, you might have seen stuff like, you know, crazy golf and, like, you know, axe throwing and stuff like this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So both bricks and mortars business, risky, both hospitality industry businesses, which we're hoping will be okay to sort of open next summer kind of thing. So we're working on that, and I'm working on this at the same time. So that's why it sort of allows me to sort of make my own hours at the moment. I can work evenings and weekends if I need to or whatever. So
yeah, no, that's fascinating, and I really like the name of Believe in Plan B, because I think there's so many people who have an idea and want to do something, and whether it's, I don't know, the fear of failure or judgment or whatever it is that just holds them back to say no, I can't, and your whole story is actually yes, you can, and this is how.
I think that was it. For a long time there, I think when you're feeling where you have that fear of failure, I think the fear of failure comes second. And I think it's almost the probably the number one reason why people don't act. But I think what came first for me was a feeling of hopelessness. Right. I felt so trapped, you know, and just for my particular situation, like I spent a large part of our relationship with my wife, like being the higher earner, for example.
Yeah.
It allowed us, like this career, you know, allowed me in my 20s and with my wife in my 30s to, you know, to have a pretty nice life. Like we can't complain kind of thing, right? You know, you almost feel ungrateful to complain.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really the point. But it still made me feel a bit trapped and a little bit like, well, what else can I do?
Yeah.
Like if I don't work, what's that going to mean? Like there's all these big things, right? There's like irrational fears you have.
Yeah.
Will I lose my house? Will I lose my wife? Will I lose my, you know, what will happen if I take this, you know, big plunge? So I had to be So there was this very much this feeling of like, oh, I'm just stuck with it, aren't I? I've just got to get on with it. And that was the kind of thing for ages. And I think that's what kind of, you know, affected me and sort of made me feel so down and depressed about it kind of thing a few years ago. But then there was this point, there was this sort of point where I was like, well, what's worse, right? At the end of the day, what's worse? Doing nothing, right? And carrying on like this and probably it getting worse and feeling worse and all those irrational fears probably coming true because you're just rubbish to be around, right?
Yeah.
Or do you just take the chance and maybe at least there's a chance it could be better if you do something about it? And I think when I started thinking like that, when I had that kind of that shift in my mindset, it allowed me to sort of realistically look at other options. Like, what harm was there to go to a franchise fair 2 years before I went to one? You could take it or leave it. There's no, you don't have to pay anything, or like, you know, maybe whatever, 20 quid or whatever the ticket was, or, you know, what stopped me from looking online? What stopped me from educating myself? What, you know, there was all these things that sort of, I suppose, when you get into that mindset of, oh, I'm stuck and I can't do anything about it. And, you know, you're a bit feeling sorry for yourself. And at the same time, you're also kind of like, you know, this trapped feeling I talk about where you feel like, well, look, it's not that bad. I'll just get on with it. Maybe it'll be better tomorrow. And a big part of it for me was like, you know, you try and grab on to those little victories, don't you? Like that promotion or that pay rise, or, you know, that, oh, I change jobs because it's the company, right? It's obviously the company's fault. Like it's not the work, but then you do finally realize it's the work, you know, you're not enjoying it. You're not actually getting that kind of feeling that you could be getting out of your work. And I think someone like me who's had sort of two sides of this personality where I can be analytical and I can sort of work like that, but I also feel like I'm quite creative and I've never really had an outlet for that in my career. So it's like there's lots of reasons, but then I think once you get to that point of even researching it, looking into it, checking out your options, then yes, it comes down to that fear of failure and that fear of what other people will think and that fear of what could happen. You know, there's a lot of fear, right?
There is, but I think I'm really interested in what you said around that feeling of being trapped, because it from listening to you, it's almost like you've got this good existence, earning good money and having nice things, which is trapping you to some extent, but then that perpetuates promotions, pay rises, which means more nice things and more. And so you actually just get stuck more. And so it's almost the longer that you wait to do something about it, the harder it is to step back. Because I'm assuming that there was, you know, you seem really really sensible. Yeah, I can imagine that you've kind of put money to one side to make sure that you're able to comfortably start this business, as opposed to just go in, you know, screw it and we'll see what happens. But that must, you know, do you remember feeling getting to that point of going, it's now, it has to be now, and how you kind of felt around that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just too much escapism. I just found myself, I was sort of losing a little bit of who I was.
Yeah.
And the more that my actions ultimately, the more my actions basically started reminding me of that, that's when it sort of happens. So you can be a bit miserable, but if it doesn't affect anybody and no one tells you you're being miserable, then you can kind of carry on being miserable. But when the closest people to you are kind of saying, you know, this isn't like you, like, you know, why, you know, what's going on? Like, you know, people are caring about you and understanding you, and it makes you think like, yeah, that isn't me. That wasn't me. That wasn't me who showed up there, or that wasn't me who'd make, you know, that kind of comment or act like that or whatever it was at the time. And I suppose it kind of came down to the fact that I was like, if I don't do something now, then it is just going downhill. I need to step back And the feeling, like, I think what I tried to describe before was this realization that being stuck and doing nothing and kind of like almost, I don't know, I the way you speak to yourself is not always the best, but you know, when you, I sort of telling myself to stop whining about it.
Yeah.
Stop whining about it and do something about it, because whining about it is not getting you anywhere. It's making you miserable, making people around you miserable, and it's actually, you know, self-defeating. So I was kind of giving myself pep talks, and I think what really, you know, and that's all you can do. And I think I feel like I've done that for forever, really, like in different circumstances. But the feeling here was just very much like, it's now or never. Like, I've got to a stage now where I'm in my career, where I am in life. You know, and I'll be honest with you, the biggest trigger for all of this for me was having kids. It was the biggest trigger. And I can imagine someone listening to this going, having kids should have like made you more trapped and less likely to do these things. But for me, it was the opposite. I remember the, you know, leading up to having my first kid, the feelings I was having was like, I've got to make the most of life. I've got to make the most of life before the baby comes. You know, I've got to go to that rave. I've got to go to that party. I've got to go on that holiday, whatever it is, get it done, whatever. But then what I found is when I had the baby is that feeling of being trapped, which was there before, but I just used distraction or escapism in the past to kind of just forget about it. It amplified for me. I felt like, well, now I've got children to a child at the time to think of. I'm now more trapped, and I've got to do something before I get even more trapped. You know, it was that kind of situation. Like, now it's like, it kind of felt like if I leave this now, then it's done. And obviously it would still be another 2 years before I came to that real realization that something needs to be done. I need to make a change. And I just felt this, you know, as my kids have grown, and around that time I made that decision, I kind of had this overarching feeling of that I want them to be proud of me. I can't teach them to reach for the stars and sing to them about, you know, being the best they can be. And I've just settled, and worse than settled, I've kind of like settled on something that makes me quite miserable, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to see that. And then I was like, well, they're going to sense that I'm miserable. You know, they're going to sense that, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm just moping around the whole time at that time. Obviously I had a kind of happy face, and I could perform when I needed to perform, but it was more
exhausting.
But yeah, it is exhausting. And I think kids can see through this stuff. And I was kind of like, well, in one way it trapped me further, but in another way, like, having kids sort of set me free. It made me realize what was more important. And I'd rather, frankly, have less in life, but show up as I really am for them, than to have more and be half of what I could be for them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I absolutely hear you. And, you know, like, I mean, I work in banking too, right? So I kind of get it a bit. I think that I changed jobs, same company recently. And I think the job that I'd been in for a little while, and I was probably getting a bit done with it. And that compounded with, you know, COVID and everything else. Yeah, I didn't feel like I was myself. My wife was sort of saying, you know, you're just not your usual happy-go-lucky self, you know. And the kids, they weren't saying anything, but they were just behaving a bit differently. And this really struck home, actually, just as you were talking. And I was thinking, you know, I've been doing this new job for about a month. And yesterday I finished work, obviously still in the house. But my son was like, "Oh, Daddy, you finished work. I've been waiting for this all day." I thought, I haven't heard him be like that for so long. And that's probably because he's thought, "Oh, Daddy's moping around," or whatever he's thinking. And you're so right. Like, why would you not just want to be that example and just have fun with your kids? Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And, It's interesting that you're saying about, you know, the feeling of being trapped before kids. And this is a conversation that I have quite regularly, because people now talk about like baby moons and stuff. I don't know whether you had anything like that.
We did have.
So what was on your baby moon? And if for anyone listening who's not aware of a baby moon, it's like almost a bucket list, but before you have kids, right?
Yeah, so for me and my wife, it was just a holiday. It was we called our baby moon, we thought we'd have one last holiday before we had kids, as it were. My wife was 6 months pregnant. So, there's no skydiving and bungee jumping on the holiday. Yeah. It was just a nice, relaxing, poolside, beachside sort of holiday. But yeah, for my personal bucket list, I don't think is probably a baby moon, but yeah, it was more like, I went to a music festival the summer before. Mm. And actually just at that time, funny enough, there was lots of weddings. So there was a lot of partying going on anyway.
Yeah.
We didn't specifically have a bucket list, but I think we had that fortunate situation, my wife and I, that we'd been together. We'd been married, I'd say we'd been married 3 years before we had Amber. And we were together for about six.
Right.
So we'd done for about three or four years before. No, we were together 5 years before we were married. So we basically we'd done a lot together.
Mm.
We'd grown together. We met in our sort of mid-20s, got married by the time we were 30. So we'd kind of done a lot of holidays, done a lot of experiences, done those special meals and gone to those special places and stuff. So we didn't have a bucket list per se, but we definitely did have the baby moon, because we were like, we can have one from all the sort of experiences you get, the stories you get told. Like, we were just kind of like, yeah, we need one nice holiday, just the two of us.
Yeah, it's funny. I've got some friends that I think they're on like their third year of a baby moon. They're just going. I think they're enjoying that stage of it. But it's funny, because and you kind of touched on this as well, that one of the things that I say to them is that you can't, that the fear of, oh, when I have kids, I won't be able to do X or whatever it is. But you can't understand the enjoyment of the things the kids are going to give you until they're there. It's like, you can't say to someone who doesn't have kids, do you want to go down the pub, or do you want to watch your baby crawl around on the floor? Because it's a no-brainer, I want to go to the pub. But when it's your kid and you're experiencing it, you don't want to do anything else. And it's just, I think there's definitely that trade-off as well.
Yeah, it's very different, and you don't really understand it till you're in it. So when you're, say, before the baby comes, I need to do this before it happens. The mindset is very, very different. It's kind of, it's not understanding what having a baby is yet. It's just understanding that your time's going to be taken away from you. That's really the only concept you've got. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard. You're going to have less time, and you're not going to be able to go out well because of these things, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's all you can really think of. You don't know the upsides yet. So you can understand why people do that and feel that way. But then it's when it happens afterwards, where say in my experience, for the first year and a half, say that Amber was around, like, I was kind of quite mixed. I had my times which I enjoyed with her, and the times that I was at home. And then I had the times outside the house where life, because obviously being a man as well, we get our couple of weeks paternity leave, and then we're just thrown back onto the hamster wheel.
Absolutely.
Right? That's kind of it. I think I took 4 weeks. I took 2 weeks holiday and 2 weeks leave. So I had a nice stint at home. But, it's very hard to then mentally be in the same mind frame as our wives and girlfriends, because at the end of the day, they've not only carried the baby, then they're with the baby 24/7. As hard as that is, and all the sort of different elements that they have to deal with physically and mentally, like, for us, I've always felt like, it's so hard. It messes with your head a little bit, because one minute you're a new dad, and then the next minute you're back at your desk again.
Yeah.
And for 8-9 hours a day or whatever it is, plus commute, you're not a dad And then you go home and you're a dad again, you know? And it's so immediate. And I know the girls get that many months later when they go back to work. But for us, I think it's sort of taken away from you so quickly that it's hard to have really settled into being a dad. So there's this process of becoming a dad and really enjoying it, understanding what it is and what the enjoyment is and what you can do. And obviously at the beginning, the baby can't really do much. So there's just all these little elements. Like, we're such slow burners in the process.
Yeah.
You know, compared to the girls who start 9 months before the baby's even.
I get it. Yeah. I get it as well. And I think as well, this whole, there's just this like unwritten understanding that, you know, like maternal, you know, mothers, maternal women, they just understand, you know, what a baby's needs are. It's like, well, only because they're with them all the time, like all the time for like 9 months or a year or whatever it is. And yeah, you're so right. I think that the build up to paternity leave, it's all, you know, go get them, dad, slaps on the back, you know, get out there, enjoy your break. And then the first week back from paternity leave, I found was a bit like, right, you know, make sure we're giving you the support. If you need to work from home, like a day or two, that's cool. And then the next week, it's like, right, now go to Germany, now go to London, now go to, you're like, it's just forgotten about that you're a new dad, particularly first time dads.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. It's really hard.
It is. And I think that's it. I think it's hard anyway. I think it's harder yet if you're not enjoying your work, makes you miss home more. And obviously it feels like you're missing out more. And then I suppose when you do the things with work, like the social aspects of work, which I did enjoy. I've never had a problem with the social side of work, of like, you know, of the friends and the colleagues that I've wonderful friends and colleagues I've made over the years. Like, then you feel guilty about doing those things, right? So it's kind of like, I always felt a bit messed up where I was actually mentally at and where I should be, and they felt like there's expectations and all these kind of things, which I think I felt like I'm getting everything a little bit wrong and nothing totally right.
Honestly, it's like I'm looking into a mirror, like, because you know, I got to the point before, I guess, when my son was born, and I was working so hard because you want to provide, that's what you do. And so you're doing it for them. That's why you're putting yourself through all of this. And then you're at the bottom of your own totem pole, and you can't go, you know, your boss says, hey, do you want to grab a beer after work? And you think, oh, that's going to be a 7 o'clock train home, so I'll be back at 8:30. And my wife's had, but you know, that's also the right thing to do from your career. And that's why you're doing these things, but you can't call up your wife and go, oh, I'm having a drink with my boss, but don't worry, I'm doing it for you. Because she'll be like, what are you talking about? So I just felt completely pulled in so many different directions, and just like, I can't do anything right. And it got to the point where then when I had friends who would say, hey, do you want to go snowboarding at the weekend? Or do you want to do it? I'd be like, I can't, because I'm constantly doing work to have this family time that then I'm not having.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think weekends kind of went, I feel like, you know, due to work, going out, trying to get a bit of normality in your life or whatever, like the weekdays kind of were a bit written off for me when it came to sort of seeing, spending much quality time. But then what tended to happen, and especially because a lot of my friends, close friends, had children at the same time, so, you know, our weekends were kind of off, you know. So weekends were really the solid time that we spent with the families, and then occasionally you'd have maybe something you'd want to do. But yeah, I think that's the hardest struggle with a career, with a demanding career added to having kids. And I suppose that sort of male aspect to it, which, which I think a lot of us will share that sort of feeling of being a bit inadequate, being a bit sort of useless, You know, at times, like I felt a real milestone I'd reached the first time I was able to pack the going out bag and I didn't forget something.
Yeah.
This came probably around the 12 month mark.
Yeah.
And I felt a real sense of accomplishment, right?
Because,
but this is one of those things. And my wife and I would like, we'd have little arguments about it. And I had exactly what you said before. I'd be like, but you've been doing it every day, you know, since they were born. After a few weeks, I went back to work and then I do it once a week, once a weekend, whatever. Normally you do it because you just know how to do it quickly. Yeah, so it's taken me 12 months, but I've only had like 10 shots at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Like it's almost like you're 50 times, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'm hearing you. And so, you know, there'll be so many people who are listening to this that just really resonate with I'm going to say everything that you've just said. And I guess the question that I'm almost channeling is how did you get to being in a place where you felt pulled in multiple directions? You felt trapped. You felt like you're not really potentially doing anything very well and you're doing so many things to go right now. This is my time. And I think if I'm understanding the timeline correctly as well, you've got one, your first child is here and the second is either on its way or also here.
Yeah.
So two under two.
Yeah.
How if someone's in a similar situation, how would you help frame their thinking to get into a better place?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is being honest with yourself. Mm. And that was something which I spent a long time not doing, because if you're not doing anything about it, if you're running away from it, or if you're distracting yourself from it, then you're not being honest, because you're not really treating the cause of what's making you feel however you feel. Mm. And chances are, you know, in everyday life, we try things like we spoke about changing jobs, maybe if a particular job wasn't working, whatever, like we do try different things. But what I found when I was reflecting back is that I was doing the same things but in different ways. So I kept trying the same things, changing jobs, getting promotions, doing all of this kind of stuff is doing the same thing expecting a different outcome, which obviously people say is insanity, right? So I think the main advice I would have there is to be honest with yourself and understand that there's no rush. It's only you that can push yourself and you can take it in your own pace. And it's up to you to kind of find out what's there for you. What can you learn? What can you do? Like, what do you feel passionate about? And just carve out a little bit of time on yourself to do that. And it seems hard. Like I started doing that probably, like you say, when I say the beginning of 2018, that's with a 2.5-year-old and a 1/2-year-old, right? Yeah. 6-month-old. And I had to be honest with myself and I had to be honest with my wife. And I had to sort of say, like, look, this is kind of, you know, fairly obvious. I'm not happy. I think, you know, I'm going to need to do that. And I need, you know, I can't say that any of this would be possible without her support. Yeah. She had to understand. She had to listen. She had to be there for me. She had to accept the things that I wanted, right? Like that I wanted to try or do. So that's a good place to start, is to be honest with yourself and your partner, if you have one, and soundboard it. Get it out there. Think about what you want to do. Think about what you're passionate about. And let that take the lead, because I think there is never, ever a good time to do these things, right? Mm. If you do it in your 20s, like, have you given your job enough time? Like, you know, you could be doing this, you could be doing that. Like, look where you could go. Like, you might get married. Like, oh, now you've bought a house. Now you've got kids. Like, you know, what's going to happen next? Like they're going to go to schools. They're going to need school trips, and they're going to need to go to uni, and blah blah blah. And you can go on and on and on. You know, there's always going to be something that holds you back. So if you think that now is the time, then take action, right? That is it. You've got to just do it or do something. I think that's the main thing that I found at the beginning was like baby steps. Baby steps feel like huge accomplishments when you've been doing nothing except for running away, you know? Yeah. All I was doing was escaping from sort of that life in a way. And the fact is that when you escape, it's a bandage. It stops that day feeling rubbish or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, change jobs, it can buy you 12 months, of like a renewed vigor, right? But they're all just short-term fixes, right? But actually, when I started taking things, like just that simple trip to a franchise fair or that reading Tony Robbins, for example, right?
Mm.
It was things like that, just little steps where I was like, instead of just, using YouTube for entertainment, start using it for education, start using it for motivation. Like, things that I was doing anyway, just twist it a little bit, like change the angle of how you're using things, how you're using your time. Like on Netflix, like one day watch a TV show, the next day watch the documentary that you've been meaning to watch, which gives you an idea, opens your mind a little bit to different ideas. Reading books about people who've maybe achieved the things that you want to achieve. You know, if they've done it, maybe they're a good place to start,
Yeah.
It's things like this. And it was a mindset shift. And it's just, it's starting those small steps. And you'll be surprised at how many doors open when you make little steps.
Yeah.
And that is the key. Because when I met those guys at this fair, they made me think about certain things. When I started watching X video on YouTube, that maybe I saw an ad on that YouTube video because it was targeting people who'd want to watch that video. And that showed me something which led me to a new thing, maybe a book that I'd an author I'd never heard of, or all these little things. It seems obvious, but until you start doing it, you don't see. And then you start understanding maybe these different business ideas and whatever, and then you start going, okay, well, actually I can do these things on the side. No one has to drop their job tomorrow and say, I don't care, like that. That's, you've got to be sensible within your own limits. And I suppose everybody, I'd say on the scale, I'm probably a little bit more of a risk taker, but at the same time, I'm not that far down, that scale that I would take unnecessary risks with my family and everything else.
Yeah.
So everybody has to sort of say what's their limit, what's their tolerance levels. And take those little small chains and see how your mindset changes as soon as you start putting yourself out there even a little bit.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think, on the risk taking, I heard someone, I can't remember who, but someone say that that a risk appetite isn't really a thing. It's just, it's how you make the decisions to determine whether something is a risk or not. So actually no one should like taking risks. It's just, you've determined it isn't a risk because that's within your capacity of what you're happy to do. And I think that's quite interesting. And I think the other thing that you said, which was really nice, was, taking those baby steps, and baby steps feel like big achievements. And if someone's listening and thinking, I don't even know how to take baby step, I think what you said around actually just being honest with yourself, stop going backwards and stand still and address what's going on. That's a huge thing to do. And anyone can do it. It's just a bit scary until you've done it. And then it feels really quite empowering. The last question that I had for you was around parenting. So do you have one bit of killer advice to dads out there that either you received or that you would pass on as your best piece of parenting advice?
I think probably the best piece of parenting advice. Oh, it's so difficult, isn't it? It's so difficult. I would say for me, it's about my voice, and I think that's the thing that I work hardest on. Like, being a man, we have loud, deep voices, and we can be quite scary. And I think something that I've been conscious about for some time, and my wife, you know, helps me with, is is understanding, you know, the way that we can think about how we speak to our children, even in those really, really difficult moments. And I think the trick is, I think, to really not sweat it over the little things. You know, I think you've got to have this sort of slightly thicker skin, because I think when, you know, if you were down the pub with some mates and someone dropped a glass, right? Hey, right? Your child does it and you're like, oh, my God, the world's ended.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to clean up this glass. And is it going to hit her? Is she going to step in it? Is someone going to bleed? And like, you think about, you worry. And like, but actually, look, take a step back.
Yeah.
It's the glass. Just get on with it. It's that kind of thing. I think it's just understanding the situation a little bit better and being a bit calmer. I think that's what I find. I think my parenting can be a little bit like this sometimes. And I feel like, and I think, you know, that can have so many different variables affecting that. But I think that there's always a case of taking a step back and, you know, picking your battles, you know?
Yeah. No, I love that, and I completely agree. And off camera, you can probably see there's a whiteboard, and underneath the whiteboard is a white wall that has more pen drawing on it than the whiteboard. And yeah, the phrase "we can paint over that" has never been used so many times. But as opposed to, oh, you've drawn on the wall, because you think, well, you can just paint over it and it'll be all right, you know. So yeah, no, I love that. And if anyone wants to find out more about you and, you know, Trust in Plan B, like how would they do that? What's the best way to do that?
Well, I mean, they can look at my website for Believe in Plan B, which is believeinplanb.com. And I recently actually started an Instagram page. That's at Believe in Plan B. It's the handle. So if they want to check that out, try and provide a bit of value and some inspiration on that channel as well. But yeah, and if they want to reach out, they can find ways to do that on my website or whatever, if they wanted to have a chat or just sort of get in contact and find out a little bit more if they're going through anything. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll put all those links on the write-up of the podcast as well. So Believe in Plan B. We'll see you there. Well, Amit, thank you so much for spending some time with me this evening. Really, really appreciate it.
It's been great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
That's all we've got time for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Career Dad Show. If you did, have you got 10 seconds to rate the podcast? Maybe you've got 20 and can write a review. I appreciate all of you guys for listening. See you next week. Stay cool, be kind.